From the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 9. But Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found anyone belonging to the way, men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. Now there was a disciple in Damascus named Ananias. The Lord said to him in a vision, "Go to the street called Straight and inquire in the house of Judas for a man of Tarsus named Saul, for behold, he is praying. And he has seen a man named Ananias come in and lay hands on him so that he might regain his sight. But Ananias answered, 'Lord, I have heard from many about this man, how much evil he's done to thy saints at Jerusalem, and he has the authority from the chief priests to bind all who call upon thy name.' But the Lord said to him, 'Go, for he is a chosen instrument of mine to carry my name before the Gentiles and kings and the sons of Israel.'" Saul of Tarsus, the terrorist, becomes the Apostle Paul and servant of the Lord. It'd be sort of like President-elect Obama appointing Rush Limbaugh Secretary of State. There's been an interesting religious and political history with the office of the presidency, presidential appointments to the U.S. cabinet and the U.S. Supreme Court, that is especially intriguing in light of the events of the last week. This is part of what I've been doing in my own research over the last few years, looking at the influence of what we call in research the Protestant establishment. These are the religious groups that have been the primary source of affiliation for most of the leaders in business, politics, and economics in our country. The Protestant establishment is comprised essentially of three denominations: Presbyterian, Episcopalian, and at the colonial time, the Congregational Church, the descendants of which are now the United Church of Christ, sort of kissing cousins to the Disciples of Christ. But Presbyterian, Episcopalian, and UCC are the three religious groups to which a vastly disproportionate percentage of political and business leaders in the U.S. have been affiliated. These groups comprise less than 3% of the U.S. population. Almost 50% of all U.S. presidents have been affiliated with the Protestant establishment. Over 50% of every presidential appointment to the U.S. cabinet have been members of the Protestant establishment. And just under 50% of all U.S. Supreme Court justices have been either Presbyterian, Episcopalian, or UCC. Vastly disproportionate to their numbers in the population. 35% of those in Who's Who in America are affiliated with the Protestant establishment. Similarly, the Forbes 400. This is where wealth and power has been concentrated. And interestingly enough, every time there's been a change in the system, there's been an appeasement factor necessary, arguably, by the research. John Kennedy, first Catholic president. Well, he was a white guy. Thurgood Marshall, first African-American justice of the Supreme Court, Episcopalian. Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman on the court, Episcopalian. Condoleezza Rice, the first African-American woman to serve in the president's cabinet, Presbyterian. Fascinating skill set for this amazing woman, PhD in political science, former provost at Stanford University, and a gifted Presbyterian church musician. But part of the establishment in her own way as well. Well, President-elect Obama is affiliated with the United Church of Christ, John McCain, an Episcopalian. But arguably, the time for appeasement is over. Second woman on the U.S. Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, is Jewish. Second African-American on the U.S. Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas, raised a Baptist, now Roman Catholic. We have moved on, it is argued. John McCain may have said it better than anyone this week. "My former opponent is now my president." And we are at a moment in history where the need for cooperation and collegiality and coming together is as important, I think, today as it was on September 12th, 2001. We are facing equally difficult and uncertain times ahead. And regardless of where you want to put the blame for that in retrospect, the movement is forward. I think, interestingly enough, on October 11th of 2001, virtually every commentator would have said, we're going to get more of this, get ready. And we haven't. And the reasons for that, I think, have a lot to do with what has brought us to this point in our history with the current administration. So it's time to look forward, arguably, and understand that all of us, including the president-elect, including the president-elect's former opponent, and all who will be called to serve in this administration and our country, he can use us. The president-elect can use us, and God can use us as a servant and a partner. I've got some suggestions on how he can use us, he being who you choose it to be, whoever is leading you in whatever way that you are led. He can use you to apply the principles of our religious tradition in ways that carry us forward, beyond what I think has been the end of an era that started with the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. And now we have a president that every six-year-old can look to and say, well, maybe I could be that person. We've had a vice presidential candidate that every six-year-old can look to and say, I think I could be that person. When I was six and they told me I could grow up to be president, I believed them because all the presidents looked just like my dad. It's a new day and it's time to move forward. And here's how I think we do it. The basic principles of our religious tradition are outlined elegantly at the end of Paul's first chapter to the 13th chapter to 1 Corinthians, this same Apostle Paul that was Saul the terrorist. We mostly know that passage from Scripture as a love poem. If I speak in the tongues of men and angels and have not love, and love is all of this. But at the end of that, he says, now we see through the glass darkly. There are uncertain times ahead, and aren't there? But faith, hope, and love or charity abide. And I would add peace to that. These four principles of our religious tradition carry us forward, and here's how. I think God can use all of us, and the leaders of our country can use all of us as we act on our faith with regard to the economy. We were all told after 9/11 that as an act of patriotism, we should get on a plane and travel someplace. I think we should go buy something. I think we should go buy something we don't need. Because in fact, how much of what we buy do we really need anyway? I think it's time to invest in a company. Take a flyer on a stock. One of two things can happen. It's got to go up. Or the company will go out of business. Take a flyer on a stock as an act of patriotism. Buy something as an act of patriotism, as an expression of faith in what we know is fundamentally a sound country. All of the economic indicators that are in place at this moment are more optimistic than what were in place in 1980 when Ronald Reagan took office. It's useful to remember that and put it into perspective. I think it really may be a time to act in faith, looking forward to better things in the U.S. economy. He can use us. He can use us as agents of hope. Plant something, or teach something to a kid. Simple little things. I love the imagery of spring flowers that start with planted tulip and daffodil bulbs about this time of the year. We know winter's coming, and you know what? We plant flowers anyway. And they show up in the spring and are an amazingly serendipitous image of hope. So are our children and our grandchildren. First chance you get, read a kid a story. And if you don't have a kid in your life, ask Mrs. Ashley. She'll find some for you at her library. Teach a kid a card trick. Tell him something you know. Leave them an heirloom. Tell them a story. and they will move forward, and so will you, with greater measures of hope. Faith, hope, charity. For as much as it's a good time, I think, to support the economy by buying something you don't need, give something away you don't need, too. We gave away a small, high-definition, widescreen TV a while back. Didn't need it. Went and bought a larger, widescreen, flat-screen television that we didn't need. Habitat for Humanity, Goodwill Industries, and countless other charities can use the stuff that you've got that you don't need that's still good, and they do. Maybe it's time to ratchet up the contributions to charitable organizations. I know all of us have a whole lot less money than we did 6, 8, 10 months ago. Our investment portfolios have shrunk by 30, 40, sometimes 50%. Well, take a little more of what's left and give it away as an act of charity. He can use you. We can all use a little bit directed in that way. Faith in the future, even the economic future, hope in the eyes of our children, charity for those who need a boost, and we know we're all in a position to do it. And finally, peace. He can use all of us to be instruments of his peace. How to do this? Well, I would say this, pick your battles carefully. There are some things that are worth the fight, and certainly the fight that led to the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act was worth it. There are some things that aren't. They're called Pyrrhic victories. The cost of the victory is not worth the price paid to get it. And I think a good example of what I would call a Pyrrhic victory was the passage in California of an amendment to the Constitution to outlaw same-sex marriage. That seems that the dissension and contention that went into that, the dissension and contention that's come out of it, isn't worth the fight. I say that's not as important as we think it is. It's certainly not the first issue that I would have Jesus deal with if he came back in all his glory. I think I'd put many other things ahead of it. Pick your battles carefully. Politically, pick your battles carefully. Personally, there are people in our lives that with a word or an action, we could defeat, or even emotionally, socially, or even economically crush if we chose to. I think the cost of those victories is not worth the price. We've got a chance to move forward, far more alike than different in every way that I can think of. The president-elect said, "We are a United States, not red or blue." John McCain said, "My former opponent is now my president." Well, what if all of our opponents became former opponents and we all found a way, looking forward, to become partners? I believe him when he said, "Yes, we can." I believe him because it doesn't seem half the leap that God took with Saul the terrorist and turned him into the Apostle Paul. I think he can use you. He can use me, he can use even more us united together to be agents and instruments of faith, hope, charity, and peace. Amen.